Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. We're on the radio.com app, all your devices, including smart speakers. Sam and Greg, we are here for a couple more hours till 10 a.m., normally 9, but 10 because Falcons are on tomorrow night. So we are here, and that music, of course, makes you think about what's going on with Major League Baseball. Anyway, it is the top of the hour, Mr. Crenshaw. What is today?
It is a game day Sunday.
Thank you very much.
Even though the Falcons not playing.
Yeah, but there's other games going on. So that's all that matters.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, yeah, they're only, so, and to your point, it's a game day Sunday. I need to just
it
shut
is
up.
That.
I just need to be quiet. I heard some news, and I didn't realize today was the day. Later on this hour, we're going to be talking about, and this is one of those insignificant moments or pieces of information. We're going to be talking about what happened yesterday in horse racing later on in the hour.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what happened on this date? It was the greatest horse of all time.
Secretariat.
Secretariat died on this date.
Wow.
Left the world. Now, two things I did not know. I did not know the year that Secretariat passed, nor did I know how old he was. Do you know either of those? Because, again, I had to think about that. We know the year he did all his magic, right? 1973. We know he's a Triple Crown then.
Right.
1989, Secretariat died.
Okay.
Died at 19 years old.
Right.
Yeah. I no idea. This information just literally popped up in front of me on my screen. So I was kind of like, what?
I remember when it happened. And they talked about how, you know, you say, okay, it's a horse. But because of the way that people would still come to the Calumet Farms and still want to see him, he was a celebrity. And he knew he was a celebrity.
Yep.
You know, he knew that, yeah, he knew even years after racing, he knew he was going to come out and there were going to be people around to take pictures of him because of what he, you know, and it's. I know some people will say, well, how does a horse know this?
See, that I was just going to bring that up. Let's save this conversation because later on, I've always wondered, because people will say that just as blatantly as they say things about humans. And I never got
they
the
got,
connection.
They're athletes, and they got big egos.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. They know how good they were or how good they've been. And you got to be around them. And that was
exactly.
I had a chance when I lived and worked in Augusta, Aiken, which is the neighboring county over the state line in South Carolina, is where a number of thoroughbred racehorses are trained. They send them there for the winter months. And then, you know, in the spring, they send them back out to the racetracks around the country where they race. And to be around the stables and walk around that paddock and just see them in that environment and how they play, how they, it looks like rough play. I mean, right. If you know, they all stick their heads out And if one is sticking their head out, not paying attention to one behind him, he'll reach out and bite him on like the mane, you know, the hair that goes down the back of his right. neck. And I said, aren't they? And I was like, did he just bite him? And Trey said, yeah, that's how they play. You know, that's you know, they play rough. And then we just, you know, just like you might see a pit bull or something, they're tangled around each other. That's how they play. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're aggressive, and they're aggressive animals. Yeah. And they know that what they're capable of doing, and that people treat them a little bit different than they do the other horses. And they realize that.
Yeah, see, again, save all this because I got some more, a couple other things that intrigued me about things I heard yesterday during the broadcast of that race. But anyway, Sam and Greg, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. The time has been set. The Braves are going to go up against Marlins 7 p.m. on Tuesday, starting off the divisional series.
Yeah.
The lineups are Houston at Oakland. You got the Yankees at Tampa Bay. That's the Don King series because that should be sanctioned.
I can't wait for that. I can't wait for that. I cannot wait for that. There's going to be a lot of nastiness. It's going to be so good.
Chapman is going to throw high and inside to somebody, I would imagine. again, got Miami, Atlanta, and then San Diego. That's my team right now. If the Braves can't get out of the National League, I'm pulling for San Diego. So that's what we got. Now, your thoughts on how we got to this point, man. Are you cool with it? And you like the way the team is set up, at least health-wise and moving forward, getting into their matchup with Miami?
I like health-wise for this Braves team, and I like what I saw this week with the starting pitching. That was the concern, Greg. We know this team can score runs, and we know that they're never out of a game. We've seen them this season go down to, you know, the seventh inning, eighth inning, ninth inning, and come back and win games. But you're having trouble here in the last month getting guys that can pitch for more than three innings.
Right.
And so it was great to see both of the starters this week, Max Fried and Ian Anderson, go out and pitch beyond the sixth inning, you know, and just allow the bullpen to do what you want a bullpen to do. Come in and keep that order and have the guys, and then you can have the guys come in for one inning and the next one for one inning rather than having to put guys in and go to your bullpen in the fourth or fifth inning. That makes a difference, those one or two innings. And so let's see if we can start out again. Max Fried is going to get the ball for the first game. We'll see what we're going to do against this Miami team that we won 6 out of 10 during the regular season. The defense, too, was big. Especially when you look at game one. And that's the thing I take away from this Braves just playing in a short series. It's a short series. It's best of three. You almost have to win that first game. You don't want to put yourself in a backs-to-the-wall situation having to win those back two. And so it seemed like that game was going to go on forever. The records were dropping for most combined strikeouts in a playoff game, for the most scoreless tie, and some great defensive plays to preserve that scoreless tie until the Braves could push that run across. Oh, by the way, Freddie Freeman, right? You know, you talk about this series. You talk about how the season started with Freddie Freeman sick, you know, with coronavirus, and the fact that he's at an MVP season. And I think he showed people why by delivering that game-winning hit. You know, we'd like to hope that when they name the MVP for the National League for this year, we're going to hear his name called.
Two things. One is, did anybody steal what we were talking about with that celebration? You know, the Braves, when they have a walk-off and they celebrate.
Name,
with the hands up in the air.
Hands.
Yeah. And we talked about that right after he did it, and somebody should have named. Nobody had named it. I'm wondering if not, at this point, somebody stole our idea and gave it a name. You know, we were talking about the Braves bounce or something like that. You came up with one that was kind of really obscure, and I wasn't feeling it right out of the beginning, but the more I thought about it, I was like, okay. But anyway, that's one. The other one is, and I'm going to take a page from, and I realize he's one person on a team sport. I'm going to take a page from what's going on with the Lakers right now and the issues you heard out of LeBron that he has with the voting for this year's MVP and that he didn't get it. And it upset him. I won't use the phrase he used, but he ain't happy about it. Okay? And I think the Heat are paying for it right now. Because LeBron, again, he's just showing everybody and reminding them who he is. He's also reminding them, you know, we saw this with Tiger, too, how he changed his body. And of course, then he had all the back issues. But, I mean, you didn't see golfers in shape like him. Okay? LeBron lets it be known that I'm not just putting all my money in the bank. He spends over $1 million doing things in the off season to take care of his body. He's talked about that. Yeah. So you've got that I was just going to say, you got that going on, and then mentally he goes through all of that. He, in his mind, still looks like and feels like the best player in the league. But this kind of like akin to during those Jordan years where the one or two years where they gave it to somebody else, like they gave it to Barkley one year because the body of work that Barkley had. But even though everybody knew that Jordan was the best player in the league. My point of saying all this is this, that we all believe Freddie ascended to the play MVP level and should get it. But if he doesn't get it, maybe that's the chip that goes on his shoulder as we get into the playoffs. We saw him get the last hit. I mean, he drove in that last run.
Right.
You know, so it's hoping that's something that can drive him, because you know the Marlins got a big chip on their shoulder, given how their season started. They've been wearing it all year.
And you know, going back a couple of seasons now, we're going to get some pitches on the inside up and tight on mm-hmm. Acuna.
Yep.
Because the Braves have had that issue with the Marlins, too. We talked about Don King arranging the matchup between Tampa, between Tampa and the Yankees. Remember, the Braves have had their share of nastiness with this team as well. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of that be injected at some point in this, maybe in the first game, to try to set the tone, as they like to say, set the temperature in the room for this series against the Marlins. What team, and you got to give them credit. You got to give them credit. Not just the way they started the season with all the COVID tests and all, and they were a mass unit. They were calling guys up and plugging them in and playing guys they had no thoughts of playing during the season. They had to put them out there. They needed warm bodies and uniforms. And plus, they lost over 100 games the year before.
Right.
They're making history. Ever seen a team lose over 100 games and get to this point of a season? So, but here they are. And
Donnie Baseball is going to get that Manager of the Year trophy.
He could be in line for it. He really could be in line for that this year. And that's who we got in front of us. But we're not going to get to see him play here. We're not going to see him play down in South Florida. They're going out to Houston to play. And the Braves, by the way, are offering people to come out and watch the games at Truist Park. They're going to open up the ballpark for fans to come out and watch. You have to get tickets.
And
they got different
distance
levels for you. And socially distanced. They got different, if you want to bring a group, they'll let you bring a group out. They have a section. They're going to section it off. And so it'll be a good time. The Braves will come out. They're going to put it up on the big screen. Everybody's going to watch it out there. So people were out at the Battery anyway last week. It was amazing to see the people sitting outside in the Battery just to be close to the game, even though they couldn't go inside. So the Braves are going to make it available, watch parties for people to come out to the ballpark and have that ballpark experience while the Braves play in Houston.
The only thing I'm really worried about, by the way, Sam and Greg, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, is Melanson. It's that closing position. Listen, we're fourth in the league right now in the bullpen. All right, and you talk about all this other stuff that may or may not happen, and you don't want to get rattled. You don't want to get pushed. I see Miami doing more, sort of trying to poke the bear in the cage, being against Atlanta. Like you said, a lot of stuff high and tight to Acuna and all that, but it's what happens. We know that these guys can come back in a close game, or even if the other team's got a few, you know, runs ahead of them, we feel confident from the seventh inning on these Braves can get those runs. My concern, not a big one, but still a concern, is this bullpen in late innings. And that's the only thing I'm going to be really looking at in this best of five. You talked about the best of three. Well, there's not much more room for issues if you have a best of five, too. You want that best of seven, but this is what we have coming up next. And the other thing about this is we've watched these guys playing on neutral field. No home field advantage, none of that stuff. So all of that put into a blender. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
It will be. You're going to Houston. That's a place with a retractable roof. So they can't. I don't know if they're going to close it all the time. I don't know if they have different days to open it. I don't know how they do it. You know, but that's the other factor as they go to play out there this week.
The other thing is that we don't talk about this, but I can't picture it in my head, but what the teams are used to and how much foul territory, how many extra outs are you going to get in that stadium in Houston? That's actually a relevant point, because it's like you think about when you play like the Oakland A's, you got all that extra of space that's not on the field, where you get those extra outs. So I'm hoping that that comes into play too. But let's switch gears and talk basketball next. The NBA Finals are going on down in the bubble in Orlando. We're going to talk to Sekou Smith next from NBA.com. Sam and Greg, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. Check us out on the radio.com app. It's Sam and Greg here till 10 o'clock this morning. Falcons are going at, up in Lambeau Field against the Packers. I say that all morning. So we get a little extra time this morning. Listen, good morning.
Why do you say it like that? Why do you
because
say it like
that? Because that's way people.
Why do you say it like that?
Because people who grow up around the Chicagoland area don't have the exaggerated Midwestern accent that the surrounding states have, so we like making fun of that. That's as I remember growing up. And depending on what side of the, you know, what your background is or where you're from, like one of the things, especially Wisconsin, they just, it's like the movie Fargo where they talk there. A lot of that, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have a beer up to the cottage. In Minnesota, it's kind of the same thing, Fargo. That whole thing.
In Minnesota, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's okay, why right. I say we're going to the Packers game. we're going to go out, do some hunting in the morning, do some hunting and fishing. Then we're going to have some bratwurst. We're going to bring them over to Stasha's house, and then we're going down to the lodge to watch the game.
Oh, to whose house? Whose house are we going to?
Stasha's. Stosh is another way to call your friend. That's for his name, Stanley. That's who Stanleys are. Stanleys are Stosh's.
Okay.
Man, you got me going. Don't take me down this rabbit hole. Indiana has a whole other thing, right, but we'll get into that another time. Listen, the guy is down. He wishes we were in a bubble. He's been down there for a while. Friend of the show. And Sekou Smith. Is this the first time we've talked to Sekou since he's been in the bubble?
I think we talked to him once since he's been there.
Okay, I wasn't sure. Well, good morning, Sekou Smith, NBA.com, and you're down there covering the finals. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. I thought I heard some strange stuff down here until I heard you talk.
Listen, it's a Midwestern thing. I can't help it, man. I can't help it. listen, what is – so you've been there for however long you have been there, as you sit here today on October 4th, what's been your overall experience? The game aside, what's been your overall experience about being down there in the bubble doing your job the way you have been?
It's been interesting, to say the least, you know, just from a logistical standpoint, trying to wake up, get your bearings, and do Groundhog Day, you know, every day, basically. You're just limited in where you can go, in ways that are, you know, you got to adjust mentally to not being able to have the freedom you used to have in terms of freedom of movement. But the basketball's been so good, and the health and safety component has been through the roof. It kind of takes away some of the sting of the fact that, you know, we're here basically back and forth between our rooms. The 1.7 mile loop around the property and the arena. You don't have much in the way of dynamic lifestyle outside of what we're doing every day, you know, getting these games covered.
Spending time on the waitforit.com hotline is one with Sekou Smith, NBA.com. Always great catching up with you. Before we get into the basketball, talk a little bit more about the bubble and the fact that we're seeing stuff with the NFL this weekend. Has there been a lot of talk about it, or any talk about it at all, about what other leagues are facing and how the NBA has not had to deal with that?
That's a good question, Sam. Honestly, we haven't talked about it a whole lot. There's such a secure feeling here with the daily testing and the fact that everybody is really sheltered in this environment. You know, you're not concerned about anybody in the bubble testing positive because, you know, they've had such a low incidence of anybody. You know, players have been, you know, largely drama-free. it you do watch the outside world. You know, you look up and these college games are affected by it. Certainly the NFL, you know, the news about Cam Newton yesterday was kind of made its way around campus. You know, everybody was talking about it. But no, you really don't concern yourself with it because you know it's being handled in such a first-class way here. You just hope and pray for everybody outside of here that they're staying safe.
Saiku Smith joining Sam and Greg, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. When you look at this series, at least for me, it seems the resurgence of Rajon Rondo has been the key for the Lakers. You knew what you had with the big guys, but him playing the way he has played is for me, the X factor in making this trophy, I believe, ended up back in Los Angeles.
I think it's been Rondo. I think it's been Dwight Howard. I think Kyle Kuzma has popped now in the finals. You know, he had been up and down, largely, you know, in the lead-up. But it's really that entire supporting cast, Caruso. Through two games, they've given you exactly what you wanted. If you're LeBron James and Anthony Davis, you just needed some quality, you know, effort and production from that supporting cast. You already go into the series, you know, with a decided advantage. Your two stars are top five, you know, guys in the league. Miami doesn't have anybody close to that in terms of, you know, just sheer talent. So, but Rondo's been the Rondo we're used to seeing, excuse me, throughout the early parts of his career. You know, just a guy who's an absolute technician and a student of the game and somebody who understands the magnitude of this moment. I mean, he was barking at Kyle Kuzma in game one, you know, and just it was relentless. He was not going to allow anybody to slip up and show any sign that they weren't completely locked into what they're trying to do. And I think Frank Vogel and that Lakers staff have done a really good job of preparation. But it's really about the execution on the court. And when it's not LeBron running the show for the Lakers, it's been Rondo.
And the thing about Rondo is, for at least for me, he reminds me, and as everything that you said about, you know, him playing like he has a few years ago, but the thing about the way he plays, he's always reminded me kind of like John Stockton, in that you don't expect any sort of bravado. I mean, the guy is a tactician. He does what he does, but he also knows how to be a pest. And he does those little tic-tacky things to who's ever guarding him, you know, a shot here, a shot there, but you don't see it that much. And he drives you crazy. And I think that Rondo is back. As you said, the other guys that have surprised you, and you brought up his name, I was going to get to that. Who put Dwight Howard in a DeLorean and going back 5-10 years and making him play the way he's playing? You're absolutely right. He has been surprising.
I think Dwight's trying to make up for his previous run with the Lakers. If you remember in 2012-2013 season, he and Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol, you know, Meta World Peace was supposed to be the Western Conference answer to Miami's victory of LeBron James, you know, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, and it never happened. Injuries, all sorts of other drama, you know, melted that team down. And the Lakers, you know, hadn't recovered until now. And when I talked to Dwight last week, you know, before the finals started, he was reflecting on the fact that, you know, it had been all these years since that previous Lakers team was supposed to do what this one's doing now. So it felt good for him to get back to do it here in Orlando, where he began his career, where he authored his Hall of Fame credentials as a player in this league. I think you'd be a pretty spectacular evil person to not root for a guy to come back and reclaim his career the way Dwight has this season. He's been a really good player in whatever role the Lakers have asked of him. And in the playoffs here, you know, against Denver previously and now against Miami, his physical presence has been huge.
But Saiku Smith on Twitter at Saiku.
Have a little technical issue with Mr. Crenshaw here, Saiku, so forgive us. We'll try and get him back here at Sports Radio 92.9 sure. The Game, 92.9thegame.com. Let's talk about that Miami team here. I mean, them ascending the way they did, getting past who they've gotten past, starting with the Greek Freak, and where they sit right now. What is it that they are missing, you know, other than having a LeBron on their team, making a dent into this series so far, because I haven't really seen that much of a decline of play. I've seen defense over, off the charts with the Lakers, but what adjustments do you see the Heat needing to make to you know, get game three?
Honestly, I'm not sure there's a real specific adjustment they can make. They need to be healthy and playing at their zenith as a group in order to have a shot against the Lakers. Losing Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo, you know, before game one was over, was really kind of a sledgehammer to the gut for the Miami Heat. They're, you know, they can't realistically think they're going to beat the Lakers without two of their best players, without arguably their two best players in terms of how they performed in the playoffs. Dragic was, you know, playing at an unbelievable level, and Bam Adebayo had come on and made his case for being one of the best big men down here. So not having those two guys, you know, I think it's unrealistic to assume that Miami is going to be able to win more than a game. I mean, and I hate to be pessimistic, but how do you do that without two of your best players? It would be the same for anybody, though. If you get to the finals and lose two of your best players, arguably your two best players, you're going to have a very hard time to win.
Again, Sekou Smith joining us from NBA.com, joining Sam and Greg, Sports Radio. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. I apologize for the technical issues that we're having here. I'm not sure if we have Mr. Crenshaw back. You there, Sam?
You got me back?
Okay, there you go. Am I there? You go. Yes, nope. You are.
Okay, all right. You know, I just want to ask as Sekou one thing. We got them. It didn't take long for the coaching carousel to warm up. Talk about Doc Rivers to Philly. Did you see that happening that quickly?
No, I didn't, Sam, and neither did some of the other candidates for that job. yeah. You know, Doc's departure, you know, with the Clippers was a stunner in itself. But the fact that he would get back into the hiring pool as quickly as he did, you know, there was a lot of rumors going around, you know, maybe he was going to take some time off, maybe he'd do a little TV or something and, you know, kind of evaluate his next steps. But he dove right back in, and he didn't go in somewhere where the challenge won't be monumental. I mean, now he's going to be, you know, charged with trying to get Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons over the hump, you know, as the leaders of that Philadelphia team. But let's just say, after talking to a couple other guys who were candidates for that job in Philadelphia, they were none too pleased that Doc, you know, got in there as quickly as he did and really reshuffled the coaching carousel you spoke of, Sam. Now it becomes a totally different machine. You know, Mike D'Antoni, Tyronn Lue, several others are now left to figure out who goes where based on these openings.
Listen, Sekou, we want to apologize for the technical issues, but also thank you for getting up and joining us this morning. We want a do-over on this segment, but I tend to agree with you. I don't know what Miami can do at this point to come back and win this series, but stranger things have happened in sports. So enjoy your time down there. You will have a great segment for the book that you write 15, 20 years from now because of your time in the bubble, man. So really, that's what everybody's using. This is the inspirational part of the books that are going to be coming out down the road. So listen, man, just stay safe down there. Travel safely and enjoy the games and enjoy your time there.
Thanks, fellas. I appreciate it.
All right. Sekou Smith from NBA.com joining Sam and Greg here. We're going to get some duct tape out and fix whatever little issues we got, and we'll be back. Up next, we are going to talk about college football. Going to talk about some horse racing. Going to wrap up a couple sports on the periphery before we jump into NFL full force in the 9 o'clock hour. That's up next. Sam and Greg, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com.
And they're into the stretch, and it's Swiss Skydiver, the Philly, and the Kentucky Derby winner Authentic. They are nose to nose as they arrive at the final furlong. Swiss Skydiver digs in at the rail. Authentic on the outside. These two putting on a show. The Derby winner and the Philly. Swiss Skydiver inside. Authentic outside. They're nose to nose all the way to the wire. And it is going to be a photo finish. Was it the Philly? Swiss Skydiver.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. That was a great race. I mean, and those two pulled great away call from everybody else, too. The call from the Preakness yesterday. So here we go. Swiss Skydiver, the winner, the sixth filly to win that race. But here's the important part.
You know what we're missing?
What's that?
You know what we're missing? And we lost her this week. Helen Reddy played in the background.
Oh.
You know what I mean? We lost Helen Reddy this week, and her famous song, it would have been just perfect timing, you know?
Tell everybody what that is.
Just saying.
Tell everybody what that is.
I Am Woman.
Thank you.
Okay. Right. Helen Reddy, I Am Woman. And that's her famous song.
Yes.
She passed away this week, and wow. You know what I mean? To have a filly win one of the Triple Crown races is rare, very rare.
So here's the immediate thought that I have when that race ended. There's got to be a sponsorship somewhere. Because, I don't know if horses do advertising, are used for advertising, animals, that is. But I think some of them have been. Some animals have become famous as, you know, endorsers, but I'm wondering if it can work the other way around. My point is, the company Swiss Miss. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. How about that?
How about some hot chocolate right now? How about some cocoa? Swiss Miss. The filly who won it. You see what I'm saying?
Drop a couple of marshmallows over there in it. There you go.
In October, in Baltimore, it's a little nippy. Forget about your mint juleps.
Oh, yeah.
Give me some Swiss Miss. That's what I'm thinking. But, yeah, it's been a minute since I had forgotten that we'd even ran or the Belmont had even been run. Because I was sitting there thinking yesterday.
The Preakness had been run because the Belmont ran first.
That's what I'm saying.
Belmont ran before the Kentucky Derby.
I understand it. Everything was out of order, so I had forgotten that it had already run. So I'm thinking that we're around the corner. When are they going to put the Belmont in? Because as the race started, everybody's talking about Bob Baffert's horse and Authentic. They won the Derby. If it wins this race, now we got another chance at seeing the Triple Crown. But like a moron, I didn't even know that the thing had already run. That's how unplugged I've been to some of the sports that have gone on. The whole sports calendar that we now normally know of is all out of whack. Like, again, you got to remind some people, hang on, if you're a golf fan, golf fans know this, but Tiger's going to be in the Masters. But they're going, wait a minute, the Masters, they're going to do it in November this year. So, again, everything's all kind of topsy-turvy and turned around. Did you watch the race, though, Sam, the Preakness?
I did not get to see it. Did not.
Did you remember what happened before the Kentucky Derby and Bob Baffert's horses? He had another horse that was supposed to run. It, whatever the term is when they, kind of rise up on their hind legs and, the horse was spooked by something. And it fell over on its back. It didn't get hurt, but yet they had to scratch it. So he had that going on. Then he wins the race, Authentic. And when they put the roses around Authentic, if you remember, they showed the footage yesterday. He got kind of spooked by the tassels that were down by the four. And so he started running around a little bit while they're trying to get him in the winner's circle. And he knocks over Bob Baffert. He ends up on his backside in that real pretty blue suit, and his James Bond villain hair was all messed up. Yeah, that happened at the Kentucky Derby. They didn't show it on film. They didn't, Tirico and those guys, they didn't have that, or if they did, I missed it. But they showed it yesterday. So the year this dude has had has been interesting, but he's had some experiences and some hiccups in a way that I don't ever remember seeing. But again, people who follow horses and know horses and all that sort of stuff. I didn't even know that was a rule that if a horse, stands up on its hind legs and then maybe slips and falls, but the horse got back up. It's an automatic scratch from the race.
I didn't know that either.
I learned some stuff yesterday. Right.
But I figured as long as it's healthy, he still go out there and run.
Exactly. Exactly. But then, seeing that guy in that really, nice 4-digit suit, maybe 5, I don't know. But he got knocked the you-know-what down. he really did. So that was all part of yesterday, man. But, the sixth filly to win the Preakness, Swiss Skydiver. Sam and Greg, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. We are going to be all about the NFL and all about the Falcons Monday night matchup with the Packers coming up top of the hour. We're going to talk to D. Orlando Ledbetter in the 9 o'clock hour. But let's take a minute and go back to what we saw last night and the Bulldogs. Just beating up on Auburn and that series and what the Bulldogs look like. And we talked about it yesterday during the day that the defense was probably the most impressive part about this team right now. There was questions about the quarterback, but that was what we dissected yesterday. The game is now over. And we didn't have this guy with us yesterday, but we got him today. Our producer, Ken Roundtree, who is the biggest Georgia Bulldogs fan. So we're going to bring Ken on right now. And, Ken, what were your thoughts about what you saw yesterday?
I think they did what they needed to do this game. We said last week, coming off the Arkansas win, that, well, at least I said, I didn't think they ran the ball enough. I think they came out to this game and said, we're going to run the ball a lot. And they were able to do that really good against the Auburn defense. That's missing, you know, Marlon Davidson and who's the other guy that went to Carolina? I forget his name.
It's all right.
But anyway, they're missing two of those defensive tackles. So Georgia was able to run on them. And the offensive line for Georgia really came through this week because they looked kind of sketchy the first week against Arkansas. They looked big, but they looked slow against Arkansas. And this week, they looked a lot better and was able to get to the second and third levels in the run game. So I thought that was good. The defense looked like the defense we all expected. This defense is good.
I mean, yeah, they
really
are
really good. If you think about last year, they didn't allow somebody to score 20 points on them until LSU. Well, here we go again. You know, Arkansas only scores 10. And then now Auburn only scores 6, no touchdown. So,
Ken, you talked about the quarterback situation and one guy coming back from injury, one guy being cleared, and Stetson Bennett, we weren't sure if he was going to start or not. I don't know why you would change him at that position. I watched that game yesterday, and I saw some poise. I didn't see Joe Montana back there, but what I saw was a kid. Is he a sophomore?
He's a junior.
He's a junior, okay. He there was a poise to him, and there was a silent confidence about the way he played yesterday that impressed me. I don't know. How do you feel about him?
Well, I learned this story yesterday, and what's pretty amazing is at the beginning of September when Jamie Newman left, they told him that, hey, we don't see you getting any reps here at the quarterback position. You know, he was fifth on the depth chart at that point. He wasn't even getting reps with any of the offensive until JT Daniels – you know, was not going to be clear to play, and then he started getting reps. So I think that's amazing that he went through some of the even of the fall camp not getting any reps because there weren't no reps to give. Stetson Bennett's fine. He's a good story. He's a former walk on, left, came back. Now he's on scholarship. As long as Georgia can run the ball and Stetson Bennett can just do what he's been doing, I think Georgia can be good. I'm still concerned about what happens when Georgia has to throw. Can Stetson Bennett, can he do it? And that's the thing we haven't seen so far because they haven't had to do it. They had to do it a little bit in maybe in the Arkansas game, but they still try to run the ball during that game as well. But my concern is in 2 weeks when they go to Alabama, and maybe we can't run the ball as well as we thought we can. Can Stetson Bennett put it on his back and carry it? That's why I don't know. That's where the questions for me come in about Stetson Bennett. He's a good little quarterback. I like him. He knows the offense. He can escape trouble like he did last night. But can he take the team on his back and carry them to a win when they need him to?
I think that's the question you have, Ken, when you look at him. But, I mean, they're still getting questions answered about Mac Jones over in Tuscaloosa, too.
Yep.
He had a nice game against Texas A&M yesterday. So, I mean, there's still a lot of fact-finding going back. One of the veteran quarterbacks in the conference, by the way, is coming to Athens next week up at Tennessee. And maybe he's got things going in the right direction. I just think he's got so much talent around him, and they're finally playing as a team. I saw him last year against Georgia State, and I wasn't impressed with him at all. But that's been months ago in a whole different season. What do you think about next week with Tennessee coming in?
Yeah, with I want to see if I see his name, Guarantano or whatever.
Guarantano.
Yeah, he's been such an up and down QB since he's been there. I mean, he's been the starter, looked really good. Then he's been benched for somebody else, and then he's come back and looked pretty good. So so far this season, he's looked pretty good. But let's see what he does against Georgia, because sometimes against Georgia, he hasn't looked good, and they've often replaced them like they did last year.
I saw an NFL player yesterday, as far as I'm concerned. I saw a guy, number 13 on defense. Is it Ajuri? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Ajuri.
Ajuri. I mean, I looked at this dude. Now, granted, it's early in the season, but of everybody who played on that game, and plus he had a guy who got caught for spearing, he got taken out. Was it LeConte?
LeCount, yeah.
LeCount got thrown out of the game. But I mean, sorry, Sam, this guy looks like he's ready to play on Sundays or is headed that way. He did.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Hitting hard, being around the ball all the time. I mean, the numbers don't show it, but it looked as if at times they were trying to get away from him. So I was more than impressed. Excuse me, with the matchup I saw yesterday, 27-6 against Auburn. Yesterday we brought up Ken when we were talking to Chris Waller about Tennessee in that matchup. And Sam had alluded to it earlier. These guys are sitting at 2-0. And I had asked him the question that everybody seems to be talking about, is Tennessee back? And depending on who you talk to as far as fans, whether they're SEC fans, ACC fans or not, it's one of those kind of split down the middle. But given the nature of the SEC right now and recruiting and all of that, do they have the coach there? Do they have the infrastructure to go up against a Georgia, given we have a Florida, an Alabama, all the teams that are there right now? Or do you see them sitting there for a few more years as far as top being a top recruiter and rebuilding that program?
Well, I mean, Texas said they were back a couple of years ago when they beat Georgia, and I'm still waiting for them to be back.
Exactly.
I don't think Tennessee is going to be back until they – win the East and beat Georgia, then we could say, okay, Tennessee's probably back. Tennessee's back. It's the same that goes to Florida for Florida. Everybody's picking Florida to beat Georgia, but they're not actually going to be back until they beat Georgia and win the East. So that's, you know, that's the kind of tells me when these teams are back. Yeah, they can have a good season. You know, Tennessee can go, you know, 7-3, 8-2, and that's probably good. But does that mean they're back? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't see them. I think they got the right guy there. I think they got the right coaches there with Jim Chaney. I mean, he's making that quarterback look a lot better than he has been in the past. But to me, it's always when they're going to be back is, well, if they win the East, then I would say, yeah, they're back.
Yeah, they got an all-star team of coaches up there with T. Martin and Chris Winkie, and they got an all-star team up there.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. You guys have been talking about a couple of the coaches in the SEC. I got to have something to hang my hat on for, you know, to follow these programs or watch them when they're on TV. And if it's the coaches that bring me to the TV, that's fine. But what we've all talked about and then throwing in what you got at Mississippi State, what did he call them? The what on the corner?
Drunk man on the corner.
The drunk man on the corner. Okay. And then you got, you know, Lane Kiffin. And Ole Miss, I wonder if these guys are going to just continue coaching our reputation and what they've done in the past, or do you actually think they're going to put the work in, like everything else
in this conference? Like I said, it's the Saban factor. You're having fun at the Booster Club. Coach, great, you won 9 games for us last season. Coach, you won 10 games. Coach, you won 11 games. And then there's always that jack wagon fan says, when you going to beat Alabama? And that just ruins the whole Booster Club meeting. And that's the SEC right now. It really is. The coaches are doing well, but having Saban in this conference makes coaching a pain in the you-know-what. And you know, to me, that's me. Ken, I don't know what your take is on it. And because half the coaches in the conference were his former assistants or coach for his former assistants. And, I mean, I think that's the thing that frustrates a lot of the coaches and sucks a lot of the wind out of the conference. And that's what makes the two guys in Mississippi such a breath of fresh air, although one of them was a Saban assistant. So.
Yeah, just wrapping up real quick. Either one of those guys, those teams in the future, I think can beat Alabama. Mike Leach can luck up and beat Alabama by throwing if they're going to throw for 600 yards. But I'm really interested to see how they both build their team there in Mississippi because I don't think they'll really go after the same type of players. But I'm really interested to see how Kiffin builds Ole Miss and how Mike Leach gets in some skilled players there to catch the ball for him. And I think both of those teams have a really good chance in a couple of years to sneak up and start beating Alabama.
They're going to go after the best mobile quarterback available. And I don't mean just Michael Vick-type mobile. I mean Russell Wilson-type mobile because it was that type of quarterback that has beaten Alabama.
Yep.
you know, going back, Johnny Football and the rest of them. But again, congratulations to the Bulldogs, 27-6 over Auburn yesterday. It is all about the NFL coming up in a few minutes. Moving into the 9 o'clock hour, we got an extra hour. We're going to talk to D-Lid about this Falcons Monday night matchup at Sam and Greg. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.